Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Hey guys, and welcome to Happy, Sad, Confused. I'm Josh Horowitz. That's Sammy.
Hi!
So good at responding to my cues. That's Sammy, very subtle.
I wasn't on the last one.
I know, it sucked. No, the podcast itself was great. The interview was great, of course. Edgar Ramirez, delightful.
Ugh.
But the intro was me flailing about
for
4.5 minutes.
Yeah, well,
because
I was eating lunch and you wouldn't wait for me to finish.
You know what's happening right now?
What?
Here's what's happening. The Toronto Film Festival is in what? Don't roll your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Is in about a week and a half, I leave. I'm very excited. And they're screening a lot of movies before the festival. So I'm just like running around. I saw two yesterday. I saw one today. I'm seeing as many as possible. So
your life is so hard. You have to see so many movies.
That's not cool. I know. I'm an asshole. But I always say, look, yes, the job is fun and I get to do fun things, but I hate myself more than anybody does. Don't worry.
No, I
have the self-loathing. You
and
don't have to hate me.
Yeah, and it's hard because like you're like me where it's like, I don't actually want to do anything.
Right. Yeah. My couch is really cozy.
Yeah.
So that's why we didn't have you on the intro last time. So I apologize. This is already much better than the last one.
Thank God. That's all I like to hear.
Gold.
Yeah.
And this week is another kind of like a smaller episode, partially because of timing or whatever. But I did want to fit him in because he's somebody that we've talked about having on for a while. And he's delightful. And he's funny. And he's talented. And his name is Tony Hale.
Tony Hale.
Tony Hale. Of course, is Emmy nominated once again for his role in Veep. The Emmys are in a couple weeks, so he was kind of like making the rounds, putting out the good word on Veep. He's so great. I mean, I think fell in love with him on Arrested Development. Amazing.
Buster.
And he really is one of the nicest guys that I've encountered in this sordid business and has done some kind of sketchy stuff with us in the past. And
sketchy meaning like sketches, not
no,
like
sketchy, like
weird,
stuff in a back
not
alley.
Like creepy,
really
weird
stuff. Yeah. We murdered a homeless guy together
He's
once.
He's done sketchy stuff with us, so we're very close.
This is why I need you here to clarify my weird statements. And I will venture to say that this conversation is kind of profound and thinky.
Well, you scared
not
the
from
shit
me,
out of me. Cause,
more from him.
Well, I said to you, I was like, how is, because I'm such a huge fan, so I was like, how is Tony Hale? And you were like, oh, he was such an asshole. And I was like, what? And you're like, oh, just kidding, he's the best.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And I was like, you did get me. You did. I was upset.
No, he is, he has a really interesting perspective on the business and life and kind of just enjoying yourself. Like, he talks very frankly about how, and you'll hear this in the conversation, but like when he was making Arrested Development, this was like his dream job. And, you know, he had been like toiling away and, you know, like striving to get on like a really smart, funny show for a decade. And then he gets it.
He's on the shining example of.
Yeah. He gets like on this like show that we all love and adore. And while the experience was good, he says, and he talks about this, it wasn't like satisfying in a weird way. He didn't feel like he'd made it. He was already thinking about the next thing and judging himself. And I think it's something we all are victim to, not enjoying what we've got in front of us. And he's very thoughtful about that. And like it takes a lot for me to have a thoughtful conversation. Thankfully, Tony brought his A game.
Did he talk about this? I'm about to give you a very rare Tony Hale fact. I don't even know if Tony Hale knows this.
Okay.
He was on, I was watching this a couple weeks ago, Tony Hale is on an episode of Dawson's Creek. as a doctor in the episode where Joey and Pacey lose their virginity to one another.
Whoa.
A huge moment in all of our lives.
Did he have hair? What was his hair situation?
He actually looked pretty much the same, and I believe he played the doctor to Dawson's dying grandmother or something.
Right.
And I remember seeing it and being like,
So, wow, that's quite a reaction.
It was crazy.
You know, I did know that because in my copious research, I noticed the guest star appearance. We did not talk about that. So
oh,
this gives us an excuse.
It.
I know.
You
this is, again,
it.
Why I need to talk to you before I conduct the interview. Next time, Tony, when you're on, we're going to spend 30 minutes on that Dawson's Creek.
On that guest two spot. Lines in Dawson's Creek in the...
It's kind of a fun idea for a spinoff sequel podcast to Happy Sad Confused, just dissecting your most inconsequential role in just absurd detail.
But then where that led you. Wow. Okay, we'll offline about it.
Yeah, we'll talk
we'll
later.
Offline.
What else to say? Hope you guys have a good Labor Day weekend. Mm-hmm. Big plans, Sammy?
No.
Okay, me neither.
I actually caught up on all my TV, too, so I actually don't know what I'm going to do
Night of?
Myself.
Did you watch the Night of?
Yeah, all done.
Yeah, I finished up that one. Yeah.
Wow. Any recommendations out there? Let me know. I need something to do for about 72 hours.
I still haven't seen the second season of Kimmy Schmidt. Did you do that one?
Yeah, it's
okay.
good.
It's okay? Okay.
I like it.
I need to get into that one again. Okay, so when next you hear me, we have one more podcast before a little shift in Happy Sad Confused. I've mentioned this before, but we're kind of aligning with like a new entity. I want to go into detail yet because it hasn't officially been announced. But anyway, suffice it to say, there's going to be some cool new developments for Happy Sad Confused very soon. And next week's show will be kind of like the last of the first edition of Happy
Sad Confused.
Before
we start broadcasting from space.
Yes, exactly. Basically, they're sending me just outer space by popular demand. But we'll talk about that later. For now, I hope you guys enjoy. I know you will. The delightful, absurdly sane and thoughtful Tony Hale.
What an angel.
He really is.
I love him.
He's just a good man.
I wish he was here right now.
He'll come back, I'm sure. I hope. Come back, Tony! Look who just arrived in my office. It's Tony Hale.
Hey, guys. Hello.
Hey, Tony. Oh, you're talking to the audience? They don't talk back. I mean...
Really?
Wait, can you hear them, Tony?
Wait, what am I talking into?
Tony,
what
I'm worried
about this fuzzy black ball?
Oh, no. It's good to see you.
Nice to see you.
It's always pleasurable to see you. You're off to do a big time. I mean, my little show is fine, but you're off to do a big late night show. It doesn't get any bigger than Colbert.
Well, first of all, I'm not going to let you talk about yourself that way.
Don't even try to adjust the mic. It's
not
going to work.
I'm just going to hunch down like a buzzard.
Do you get nervous about that kind of thing, about the late night shows at this point?
I think you always, it's kind of like theater, you always kind of get a little nervous, but I remember my first one was Conan years ago, and I was just so nervous. But yeah, the more you do it, the more you just kind of realize you just have to kind of talk, I mean, just kind of be yourself, which is actually hard to do sometimes.
But you're also one of these guys that, and certainly... we have used you in such a capacity where we know that we can utilize your powers for good, not just as a talk show guest. You've got superpowers.
I do love when there's bits planned.
The quote-unquote bit.
Yeah, I like that because then you can just kind of... Then you're not, like, having to seem relaxed on the couch talking about, you know, whatever.
Right.
It's like you can kind of act and do bits. I enjoy when they have those planned.
Are you doing anything? Because Tim Kaine is the guest tonight
Maybe we'll see. We shall see.
Well, yeah, the reason I bring that up, too, is, you know, obviously you're nominated once again for Veep. Congratulations.
Someone's making big mistakes.
Well,
somewhere.
They're doing it year after year. I mean,
there's a pattern of mistakes.
Right. No, not at all. Well deserved. I would imagine, you know, one of the byproducts of working on a show like that is you get asked more than your share of like political questions, which is kind of odd.
To me, I'm not a big political junkie, so I don't really. Sorry, that's my chair.
It's his stomach. He's having gastrointestinal issues.
You know what? It's fine. I'm not a political junkie. It gets very overwhelming to me. So every time I get that question, I always feel bad because I don't have as my answers aren't as detailed as they need to be. However, our show focuses more on the chaos behind the scenes,
right.
And kind of it's really it's like about office politics, really, and how we're all kind of how in that environment you can kind of position yourself to get ahead, and you know, everybody wants to be the popular kid and all that stuff. So I kind of focus on that a little more.
It's funny because I'm experiencing that in a much smaller degree. I just did a little digital series for Comedy Central. Hmm. That's an office comedy that takes place in the junket world.
And really?
So I had the same kind of like, look, Armando had like an amazing pedigree going into that show. And like, so HBO obviously trusted him. Me, I'm a little bit more of an unknown quantity. But one of the big things we had when we were pitching that show around is like, how is it going to be relatable to people?
And, yeah, sure.
And a big thing for us was saying, sure, there's celebrities in it. We're going to have guest stars and all that.
Yeah.
But at its heart, it's really just like that weird, like, from my end, in covering junkets over the years, I noticed that there's like a strata of like national outlets and online outlets and local affiliates, and they all hate each other. It's high school.
Oh,
any,
totally.
Any office is high school.
It all goes back to high school.
Right?
It all goes back to people try. I mean, even look at D.C. It's like Obama's the popular kid. How close can you get to the popular kid? And you feel empowered to be, you know, to the popular kid. So it's... I'm really interested to see that web series. What is it called?
It's called Junketeers. Yeah.
Junket what?
Junketeers.
Oh, Junketeers.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
I hope you enjoy it, man.
You're going to soon have your own convention for Junketeers.
Well, here's what I'm scared about is I haven't done a junket since this show has launched.
Really? Oh, did it already launch?
Yeah, yeah. It's out. It's out there.
Oh,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Perfect. I'm going
to
watch it.
Yeah, yeah. And but like to go back in now, I'm like worried. Either my brain's going to melt or the fellow Junketeers are going to tear me limb from limb. We'll see.
No.
I'll report back.
Because it's truth. You're just putting out truth and what you've observed.
I'm
and it's your
truth teller,
opinion.
Man.
Yes. But we're all human and there's crazy human qualities behind all that stuff.
Exactly.
And you see behind the scenes, like Veep shows behind the scenes.
Yeah, yeah. And I always say, like, I'm as guilty as anyone of asking the stupid questions, the gotcha questions, like, whatever. But, I mean, again, the byproduct of something like Veep, like, you're also put in different contexts. Like, I'd imagine you've gone to things like maybe the Correspondents' Dinner and stuff like that.
I did.
Have you felt like it's been incumbent upon you these last few years to become more educated and more kind of savvy about the political process, or have you just given up?
I think it's not – I mean, I definitely – you can't ignore it because it's – I mean, it's its own political comedy that's happening on the news right now, but with the election but again, I think even going to the Correspondents' Dinner, I enjoy kind of human behavior in that environment. Like, I like just kind of seeing the people for who they are rather than maybe the media storm around them or all of the whatever the hottest political storyline is. You know, it's just like they're in a pressure cooker of anxiety with the decisions they have to make and the weight of their jobs. And I don't know, I'm more interested in that and just the humanity behind it. So I don't ever feel that way because if I'm talking to a politician who clearly knows a lot more than I do, I just kind of like to ask them about their life.
Sure.
You know,
it is, it's funny for you as an actor that's especially kind of like become recognizable, especially in the last 10, 12 years, whatever, et cetera, especially since Arrested. I would think that's important to you. I've talked to a lot of actors about like the importance of observing human nature and just sort of being out there. And have you found is that more difficult for you now?
Slash creepy.
Yeah, exactly. You're paid to be creepy.
Oh, let me think. Yeah, I mean, it's... No, I mean, I'm not a massive star, so I don't constantly have to hide myself. I mean, I think that just sounds awful.
We should say, though, just for the people listening, that you have 6 pairs of sunglasses on right now and 3 hats, which is weird.
You know what, and here's the deal. There's nothing wrong with that. And I have side mirrors to where I can see who's behind me.
No
attached
one behind
to my
you, Tony.
Head.
It's okay.
I'm not that. So I don't feel weird. I don't feel weird still staring at people.
That's
what I'm trying to say. I just love to stare at people. And you know, anytime you're somewhere and you're just wanting so desperately to hear the conversation of another table or just looking at them, you know, even before I had any kind of success, I mean, it was creepy, you know, so I need to pull it back.
Is there, because I mean, again, you're kind of like your persona, I think the way you come across to people, you have the baggage of being a very affable, likable gentleman.
Mm. Well, that's nice. It comes from a lot of pain.
We'll get there. The podcast is young. No, but I mean...
Cut to 10 minutes from now, I'm bawling my eyes out.
Exactly. But, I mean, maybe you're not recognized by every single person you encounter, but you're mm-hmm. very recognizable, especially being on two successful, hugely successful television shows. Do you feel a pressure in always kind of being on and being sort of what they imagine you to be in their head?
I don't know about, it's a great question. I don't know much about, yeah. I mean, I guess if I'm being honest, yeah, I think you'd never want to disappoint, but I remember somebody telling me once, and it's right. Whenever somebody comes up to me and talks, well, there's a couple things. When somebody talks about Arrested, I actually really enjoy it, cause I don't remember much. I like, they say, hey, do you remember when Buster, did this? And I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Tell
so
me more.
Please tell me more.
Exactly.
And I'm like, that's pretty funny. But I remember somebody telling me that the minute you think it's about you, you're in trouble.
Right.
And
it's their relationship too.
It's their relationship. Yeah. So you always want to make it about them. Mm. And that's life. I mean, my good friends and we've known each other for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so when we're having a discussion, I know that, you're thinking about, but it's like for someone who doesn't know me,
right.
I ask questions back to them just to find out about their life. Because if I walk away going, oh, I'm amazing, cause they said this, that's when it gets sick. That's when you get sick, because your identity becomes about what other people put on you. And then when all that goes away, which it inevitably will, because this business is a cycle, you're not going to know who you are.
Yeah.
And that's when it gets dangerous.
Well, and you touched upon this, and I've heard you talk about this. There are other podcasts out there, yes. But I do want to hear you talk about this a little bit, because, the Arrested years, and you've talked about sort of like, as great as it was, mm-hmm. you weren't really enjoying the moment.
It was very challenging. I mean, it was, I learned a big lesson, which I'm sure I've shared with you before, is actually my time in New York. I was always thinking, and whenever something was going on, I was like, oh, well, you know what? This is happening, but that sitcom's coming. That big thing is coming in my life. And I always checked out from wherever I was and then went to there in my mind. And then when I got that big thing, which I think is very rare I got my dream.
Yeah.
When I got that, it didn't satisfy me the way I thought it was going to satisfy. And it scared the shit out of me. And it really woke me up to that I had not been present for most of my life. And it honestly, it was a mixture of Arrested Development and my child being born, that the one thing babies do is you have to be present because you have to keep them alive.
Right.
And I was like, oh my God, I don't know how to be present. I don't know how to do this. And so as hard as Arrested was, I mean, not as hard. It was an amazing show with incredibly talented people, but the internal journey I was going, as challenging as that was, I would never not want that, because it really woke me up to, I have to wake myself up to where I am. I have to be more present. And by the way, I suck at it. I'm not great at it. It's a daily discipline, but if you're not practicing contentment where you are, you're not going to be content when you get what you want. That was a lesson I had to learn.
And it's sadly, especially the nature of our industry on both
Absolutely,
sides of it, where it's like, yeah, I feel this. I feel a lot of exactly what you've described in terms of my own life, and also in terms of the conversations I have with people about, like, it's always geared towards, yeah, this is great. What's next?
Totally. And also, you don't go up. I mentioned this to something before. You don't go up to a dentist and say, what's next for you?
Yeah.
Because there's just an understanding that he's going to be doing cavities and molars, and that's just his life, and everybody knows that. But with actors and freelancers and journalists and directors and writers, people are interested, which I get. So they're always asking you what's next. But then that trains you to always be thinking of what's next. Because A, you want to have something to say when people ask. And B, it's the nature of our business. Typically in life, people go on a job interview for 2 or 3 months, and then they have a job for 2 or 3 years. In our business, you're in a job interview for 2 or 3 years, and you're lucky if you get a gig for 2 or 3 months.
Right.
You're constantly on this job interview, so you're always looking into what's next, which can kind of feed not being present. So it's a discipline to, like, I gotta wake myself up to where I am.
And so what is the discipline for you? I mean, does it come from, like, teaching
therapy.
Somebody? Is it therapy?
It comes from a lot of therapy.
Yeah.
It comes from a lot of that experience in Arrested, the anxiety I experienced during that. But a lot of tools, and one of them being, whenever I find myself what ifing or somewhere else, I say, not now. Right now I'm having a conversation with Josh, and that's exactly where I am. Like my friend says, you have to wake yourself up 100 times a day. So I'll find myself just in life, just being somewhere else in my mind. And I say, that's not where I am. This is where I am right now.
Right.
So it's all these little kind of tools that you just, I just have to do every day.
Yeah. So was there, when you think back to the Arrested days, is there a specific moment where that was a wake up call for you? Like in terms of,
it was everything I wanted. It was an amazing script, amazing people, a cast that I respected and understood. I mean, there was a mutual understanding of each other's talent. So it was the perfect picture.
Yeah.
And the whole thing, and also I had never been on a studio lot. I had never been to a party where everything was free. I had it's all this kind of stuff. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is genuinely everything I ever wanted. And I still inside of me feel like, A, it's not enough, which is another thing this business caters to, is it's never enough. And this isn't what I thought it was going to be. And it was, I've got to get back to simple truths in life that we're spinning on a planet. And also what's interesting with success and fame is I think fame is grounded in the thing that everybody wants to be known. And people look at fame as the ultimate being known, when in actuality, it can be the opposite. It can make you less known from people. And the thing is, if you're loved by people and people in your close circle know you, that's all the known you need.
Yeah.
And it's waking up to that reality that it's not about how many Twitter followers I have, Instagram followers, how much fame I have. I already have the foundation of being known. And it was just a lot of that mixed into that year of Arrested. And again, not having that kind of self-awareness at the time.
Sure.
But just being like, why am I feeling, what's happening in my mind? Why am I not satisfied? All that kind of stuff going on.
It clearly didn't seem to compromise like the performance at all.
It helped it, honestly, because Buster was incredibly shell-shocked, dysfunctional, panic attack-stricken character that was a fish out of water, always. And so I felt very much, again, here's the deal. This, it feels so gross because there's so many things happening in the world. And here I am like, whoa, so, and I'm not saying that, but at the time, having those kind of wake ups to my own lack of being present and content in life or whatever, I'm playing a character that's a very fish out of water. And I felt very much a fish out of water.
Yeah.
Entering Hollywood at that time.
Well, I mean, you should, and you're well aware of this. Like the lessons you're talking about are literally applicable to everybody. Like, forget Hollywood entertainment.
Yeah, and my big thing happened to be a sitcom. Someone else's big thing is getting married or having a baby or getting that perfect job or whatever. I mean, we all have. And here's another thing. It's not that ambition is wrong. It's not that dreaming is wrong. But I think for me, I put my personal value on getting it. I was like, when I get that big thing, it's going to fill some kind of void. It's going to give me value. Your value stays the same before and after success. It does not change. Your personal value stays the exact same.
Right.
And that's something I had to wake up to.
So
this is turning into like an Oprah podcast.
I know. Wow. This is the first tears on Happy Sad Confused, and they're my own.
I love it. We can talk about this stuff all day.
Well, great. Excellent. This is much better than therapy, cheaper too. So post Arrested, I mean, again, these are all the kind of the same issues we're going to dance around,
sure,
I think.
Love
but
it.
Like, were you, again, like you're coming off this beloved, if underwatched at the time, show. Were you a pessimist and like, that's it. I'm never going to get, I got my dream job. It wasn't satisfying enough to me at the time.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen ever again. So what's next?
Again, to define that a little more, it wasn't that the work wasn't satisfying.
Right.
It was more of my own crap that I brought into the situation. So that was kind of that, the development of that. After it, I think all actors think that every job is going to be the last job.
Right.
It's like, am I going to work again? But I remember doing this short series called Andy Barker PI with Andy Richter, which was really fun. And I loved Andy Richter, and he had been on Arrested on a few episodes. And we had met during then. But, there was a good 6 years after Arrested until Veep came where, I remember the same month that Arrested was canceled, I had bought a house and had my child in the same month. And I was like, oh, shit.
Worst timing ever.
What's happening? And it was like a year before the house market crashed. But so I was a little bit like, but 6 years, I mean, I was provided for, and I'm very thankful for that. I did a little, time on Chuck, the show Chuck,
right.
And then other films. And, you just kind of piecemeal work together, and it worked out. And then Veep came along, so it gave me a little more steady work.
So on Veep, which is now what, you're in your fifth?
We're going into our sixth.
Sixth season, right. Well, I mean, a couple issues that came up, especially this year. Armando left the show, yeah, which was a huge question mark for everybody. And sure, the fact that you guys are still more than getting by, you're succeeding hugely.
And to Dave, and that's big kudos to Dave Mandel and the new writers, because they really picked up the tone that was set, and that's not easy to do.
Were you? What was your 1 to 10 level of concern after Armando announced he was leaving?
You're talking to an anxious person. So, I'd say it was around 7.
Okay,
7-8, because I trusted the energy we had set and the tone that we had set, like a strong 7. I tested the energy that we set, but when somebody comes in and captains that boat, a new captain, you know, you don't know how they're going to steer that energy different, that tone different. And when Julia said, Dave Mandel's coming on board, I worked with him on Seinfeld, he knows what he's talking about, here's his writers, here's their history, it gave a lot of assurance of, okay, I think this is going to be okay.
So talking about Julia for a second, because she's somebody that, like, certainly audiences have adored in
as they should.
Right? Well, and I'm just curious, like, from your perspective, like, how you would describe what makes her a genius at what she does. You've worked with many greats, but like, what puts her in that top one percentile that virtually every actor I feel like that's worked with her puts her in?
I would say it's a mixed bag of a lot of stuff. I would say she, like, I can only speak from Veep experience because that's all I've known, but when she looks at a script, she sees the whole picture, and she works with the writers. She says, she just has that eye to go, this isn't working, this is working, this needs to be rearranged. And she knows the rhythm of comedy, and she knows what's going to be strongest for the scene. And I would say that's mixed with, obviously, let's combine with that, her organic talent, but she's an incredibly grounded woman. And there's something about when a woman like her is grounded and she's a normal person, her family is her first priority. She knows where on the list the show goes in terms of kind of life. And that comes through, I think, with a performance.
Right.
Because somebody who's maybe a little checked out, a little more Hollywood, a little more, there's a detachment sometimes in their performance that it doesn't feel grounded. Mm. And Julia really has that groundedness about her, and I think it comes through.
Do you think there's, I mean, one would argue that your most successful work, the work that people have enjoyed the most, maybe you've enjoyed the most, has been in television versus, mm-hmm,
totally,
versus film.
Definitely.
Do you think, is there any, have you rationalized in your overactive brain why that is, in terms of why the parts haven't been there in the same way in film versus TV?
I mean, I think selfishly, I'm a huge fan of developing relationships. Like, I'm a relational person. I like the feeling of family and working with people over and over. So television affords you that. Like, you're unless it's, you know, canceled after the first season, but you know who you're coming back to. You create these relationships, and I love that. I love that unit. So maybe I gravitate towards that.
Yeah.
And I think with film, I mean, I've been thankful to do parts that, you know, like Stranger Than Fiction,
sure,
or The Informant or something like that, Happy Thank You More Please, which were a little more, are definitely not the dysfunction that Gary and Buster carry.
Right.
And so that's nice to do that stuff to showcase other stuff. But in terms of me, I mean, I guess, yeah, maybe what I gravitate towards is that kind of, I like the word stability is not right for this business because there is no stability, but I think it's just that, just having that understanding of what you're coming back to. I like that. Maybe. I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it does. And I'm curious, like, also, do you find, well, I mean, I guess just give me a sense, but you're a dad, so that's a full-time job in and of itself.
Sure.
But
we came back to LA this past year. We were shooting Baltimore for the first four seasons.
Right.
And they brought us back to L.A., and I really enjoyed Baltimore, but it was incredibly hard being away from family. So to be able to work and then go home and be with family was a massive deal.
So do you feel like, in terms of your own consumption of pop culture, is it mostly TV? Is it film? Is it a little bit of everything?
A little bit of reality.
You strike me as a big Kardashian guy. What reality do you watch?
Okay. Kardashian, no. I'm not a Kardashian person because I get a little... It makes me sometimes angry, but...
No, I understand. I don't like to think I'm better than them, but I'm better than them. We're better than them, Tony. Come on.
Granted, we're all a work in progress, but for some reason it's hard for me. However, it's not to say that I haven't... I mean, like, my daughter and I love watching Project Runway together.
Sure.
It's like we've seen every season. It's like a bonding thing since she was five.
This is how you learn about fashion and competition, young lady.
We love Top Chef. We watch all the cooking shows.
Top Chef's great, yeah.
And the way, you know, it's online with the Kardashians, but we've thrown that Real Housewives of New York is quite entertaining. Maybe it's because we lived here. I love this new show called Schitt's Creek.
Oh, yeah. I haven't watched it yet, but Eugene Levy and
Oh, my God. Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara, who is another level to me. Another level. Dan Levy, Eugene Levy's son.
Right.
It's really fun. I just got into Difficult People on Hulu.
I need to watch that, too.
It's really fun. You know, so I there's something about, obviously the mainstream shows I like, but I like the ones that are maybe kind of on the sidelines a little bit.
Sure.
And it's, I don't know, there's a freedom that they give in their writing of just, because maybe they don't have to meet such a mass market.
Yeah.
That I enjoy that kind of like the reins are taken off a little bit.
Do you feel like any needs that aren't being checked by the stuff you get to do on Veep, or does it kind of like creatively check all the boxes for you? Do you feel like I need to deliver my Shakespearean sonnet
feel that. I mean, I every now and then, you know, with Gary and Buster, like living in so much tension, it is nice to, like, I just did this movie 2 weeks ago called And Then I Go, and I'm playing a vice principal, and it was just kind of nice to just have like a conversation on screen,
right,
rather than it wrapped with massive tension and anxiety.
Right.
But like another show I adore is Portlandia. I think Portlandia is such a social commentary. You know, it's like I love that stuff. So I don't know. There's a lot of and as you know, there's so many venues out there. I loved Andy Samberg's opening monologue of the Emmys. I think it was last year.
It
was the thing of him trying to watch all of the TV.
Yes, yes. And he ends up like a bunker, right,
yes,
or something.
Yes. Yep. And the anxiety that we feel of somebody saying, "Have you seen this?" And it's like, yes. "No, I haven't seen it." It's like, well, of course, no one can see everything.
No, it's true. It's
impossible.
Like, I'm paid to do this, and I'm always like five shows behind everybody else. It's like, what more do you
want? Hundreds of them. I mean, it's impossible.
Yeah.
It's not impossible, but you have to check out a life.
Exactly.
You know.
What were comedically or pop culture wise your biggest influences growing up?
Oh,
what do you say?
I love this question. I will talk about this all the time. Bob Newhart and Tim Conway.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite show growing up was The Carol Burnett Show. And to be even more specific, my favorite things were when Tim Conway would make Harvey Korman laugh, and they would obviously show that because it was kind of like live sketch. And it gave me so much joy. And there's something about Tim Conway and Bob Newhart where there was so much chaos and crazy around them, but they never pushed the comedy. They never went broad. They always held the tension. And you just watching that person living in the middle of that shitstorm and watching that tension was so entertaining to me. And Tim Conway would sometimes slowly walk across the stage as the old man, not doing anything. And it was the most entertaining thing for me to watch, but by far him making Harvey Korman crack up. And I feel like we miss that in today's television. I want to see more. I mean, as much as they did it often, which I loved watching Horatio Sanz making Jimmy Fallon crack up. It was just, there's so much joy. And I will go on YouTube and watch blooper reel after blooper reel after blooper reel, because it's just, I don't know, there's something very free about it. And I don't know, I miss that in today's world.
Please, I think growing up, one of my favorite shows was TV's Bloopers and Practical Jokes.
Yes. I mean, now we've got YouTube for that, but it's like, that was the best. It was the absolute best.
It's interesting, too, that like there isn't as much as there is out there, and there is a lot of everything, it would seem. Like the variety show, outside of like SNL, and I guess, you know, I don't know if it's Mad TV even on anymore. I don't think it is. Mm-hmm. But like... there's not
Maya
a lot.
And, yeah,
Maya tried.
They've been doing it,
right?
And I've enjoyed that with Martin Short. But even there, they don't. You know, at times I think they. I think I saw a couple times when they broke, and it was fun. But I'm like a. it's like I hone in on who's going to break, who's going to break, who's going to break, who's going to break. And maybe it's because I break the most on Veep. So I'm just like, who's going to do it? Who's going to do it? Because to watch that keep trying to keep it together is so fun.
I feel like they live in fear of Warren Michaels, who doesn't probably appreciate it as much as you and I appreciate the breaking.
I just want it more and more and more.
So we always end our conversations with some random questions from the Indiana Jones fedora.
Oh, I love that. Indiana Jones, man. That's the one of the best. It is one of the best.
The best.
Him running away from that big concrete ball. Maybe, do I just grab anything?
Maybe in the next Indiana Jones movie, you could be
New
Sala, the new like...
I'm sorry.
You could be the new Indiana Jones.
I'm totally kidding.
No, I didn't mean.
Oh, please, that would never happen. Unless he needs a sidekick.
Sala.
That's right, Sala. Yes. Okay, I'm not going to answer that because that shows my ignorance of Godfather movies.
What? You've never seen the Godfather movies?
I have.
But you can't differentiate.
I can't. If I were a rapper, my name would be... I'm going to throw out T-Slice.
Your rapping skills? Do you rap often?
I don't rap often. Okay. I like to dance to it. I wish I could change this about my body. Oh, so you do want me to start crying.
Start from the bottom and go all the way up, please.
Oh, my God. I would love to get rid of the... I'm clearly carrying around a lifesaver around my gut. Like, I think there's some kind of donut around my belly that doesn't want to go away. Right. So,
You're a spelt man. You're crazy.
Well, you haven't seen me without my shirt. And you don't. You haven't seen the lovely pear shape. The dad bod. Oh, I can't stop. I'm kidding. In 20 years, I will be hopefully more present than I am.
There you go. Let's not think about the future.
I would say that. I was talking to a friend of mine because we were talking about getting older. And I was like, it's so interesting, you know, when you see older folks and you're just like, wow, we're all getting there and it's going to happen. And you think like, what am I going to be thinking about knowing that it's just a different reality? And I think you focus on the now then as much as you focus on the now.
Right. I would end this podcast by asking what's coming up, but I'm not going to. I've learned my lesson from you, except to say that you'll be at the Emmys, which is going to be awesome.
I will. Are you
going to
be there?
I might. I'm not sure yet.
Oh, come on, Josh.
I'm going to Toronto Film Festival. I'm really excited for that.
Oh, when is that?
That's right before the Emmys, the week before.
Oh, okay. Oh, so, yeah. That's
not sure.
That's actually a lot of fun parties, too.
The parties, but also just seeing a lot of good movies, man.
Yes. I love that I focus on the parties.
I know. I'm like, that was very unlikely. You're like, you are going to rage.
No, are you kidding? Free food and free drinks. That's the best.
Well, good luck at the Emmys, or just have a great time. That's the important thing.
Thank you.
Well-deserved Veep going strong into its sixth season. It's always good to see you, my friend.
Always good to see you, Josh. Thank you.
Thanks for the therapy today.
I love it. Please, I need it. I talk about it because I need it.